Hello and welcome to The Big Idea. If you're new to the show, this is kind of an offshoot of my regular podcast of The Curious World. Each episode, Shuli and I take a topic. Sometimes we have a guest, usually we don't, and we just kind of unpack it and investigate, you know, the idea about a variety of topics. This episode is about defining purpose and the meaning of purpose and how that correlates to society. And, you know, during the recording of this, we got into our own purpose and how both she and I had a defined purpose, and then we've kind of backtracked and discovered some new things in our lives, and you know, got into my past, and we talked about, you know, my earlier ambitions of wanting to be a filmmaker and an actor. And one thing that I didn't articulate is the unhappiness that I was feeling while I was pursuing that. I think a lot of times when you have a defined purpose, you have a pathway, you have an outcome that's a target, and you can go forward, and you can go forward pretty fast and pretty efficiently. But a lot of times we don't evaluate our emotional state of the journey, because we want that, you know, the golden fleece. You know, I had big dreams. Those dreams I don't have anymore, but I'm glad I had them. I didn't abandon them because they were too tough. And I think that's the important thing for me. My life changed, and other things became important for me. I think you go through three stages of your life. You want to conquer the world. Maybe you want to see the world. Maybe you just want to be in the world. And they're in no particular order. But I think you experience life in those phases. And so what phase are you in? And there's no right or wrong. But it really is about not only living in the world, but living with yourself. As we do every week, you know, we talk about ideas, and we take them apart, and we challenge ourselves on how we think. And in you listening, you know, hopefully you'll get something out of these conversations about the way you think too. Thank you for listening. This is The Big Idea with Shuli Halak and Vandal Truong, episode 5. Defining one's purpose. So let's get started. Thanks.
Well, that's it.
That's what?
What's the idea?
Well, what's the big idea?
What's the big idea? What's the big idea, Egghead?
Salient thing for me that these days that relates to purpose is why pursue a course of action? Why even get a job? And this isn't like a fatalist thing. This is going to come out in a weird way. But what is the drive that we have internally that causes us to be happy when pursuing a certain direction, a certain relationship, a certain, you know, where we live, all these things that kind of line up in a way that you can't explain the happiness that results from it. For me, that's an indication of purpose. So I've always, for as long as I can remember, have been purpose-driven, and I would say the past few years I've sort of veered off the path a little bit and find my wheels kind of spinning in the mud. And I can pursue certain courses directions that would be lucrative and so, you know, benefit society, but I don't want to. And so that's where I start to ask myself why and what is it and why not and what will make me want to get out of bed nearly every day and want to do something. And that's where I find purpose comes in. And purpose is this sort of, you know, intangible, you can define it. I'm sure we can get a different definition from Webster's dictionary, but as it pertains to a human being, an animal, what is it? Is it something that's programmed deep in our DNA, like a dog's purpose? Is it something that is a bigger thing? Is it a collective purpose? Even if we can't define it concretely, should we be aware of it in as much as we allow it to shape our lives? Or do we just ignore it and maybe say, it doesn't matter what my purpose is, I have to put food on the table and raise my kids?
Well, I think the difference between humans and other species is other species have very clear directives in their lives. Yeah. You know, if you're a predator, every day is the pursuit of finding food.
Yeah.
And if you're like a mother, you have to feed yourself as well as your young, your cubs. It's all about survival. And humans aren't built that way. I mean, maybe we were in our Cro-Mag time, but we live in live in a world that's so bountiful in general. I'm not talking about people who are in third world countries or starving. So I think, you know, the kind of the crux of this conversation is not only purpose, but, you know, I think a lot of times people, you know, in our culture, we always strive and tell young people, you know, have a purpose, have a mission. But there's what we don't tell, the message that is unclear, that's not defined, is why are you creating this purpose and what's it for? And so a lot of times people have an emotional attachment to whatever it is their purpose is, because their purpose, your purpose is the definition of who you are. You know, I think you go to any New York City cocktail party, two questions come up pretty quickly. Where do you live? What do you do? Because they're sizing you up to pretty much evaluate how much respect am I going to give you? So we're defined by that. And we self-define ourselves by our purpose. But that it gets kind of contaminated when that purpose is just kind of slapped on. You know, I want to do this or I want to do that. Because without any real thought, because this so-called purpose or mission or whatever you want to call it is defined by most people at a pretty early age. You know, when you're a teenager or you graduated college, and then what? You haven't experienced any life, but you know exactly what you want to do. So there's two ways that this is going to end up. So let's say you graduate college and you want to be a stockbroker. And then you become one and you become a VP and you get lots of money. Great. So by definition, your life is kind of linear. Well, I suppose it goes upward. There's a vertical sense to it because you've been achieving things. The antithesis of that is that you don't know what you want to do. And so you're experiencing life. Neither are right or wrong, but I'm just saying, like, as humans, we've created only two ways to go about life.
You brought up a lot of things, and I think there's a bunch of components here. One is,
Usually you say you brought up a lot of good things. Well, we'll get a few more drinks in you. Then the compliments can keep coming.
I can't be predictable all the time. I don't want to just say like the same adjective every time you speak. Tremendous.
By the way, it's Margarita Day on the podcast.
So
if you have one, you should join us.
Yeah, and it's helping to cool us down while the AC is off. I'm very happy, by the way, that I have my notepad so I can take notes. I think you should take me up on that idea.
All right. Well, we'll see.
Well, we'll see if they even make any sense to me because I don't even know what I wrote. But a few things. One, I think that there's purpose. The word purpose, the meaning of purpose, is so broad because it could be, like you said, purpose that we know from an early age, right? So, like. There's purpose that animals have, that a dog has, that ants have, that bees have, that is, and they have their own weird social pressure within those colonies and packs and swarms and whatever. I think that there's something similar at work, at play with humans, that we are in a swarm or a colony, whether or not we want to believe it. We are social species. Babies won't live if they are not touched, you know, by a certain age. They will just die. So we know that we need to be in a social setting. We have so many social constructs that happen. And, so some of that is what you were talking about, like a stockbroker. And if I'm not misunderstanding, I think you were equating that pursuing that line of work gives you a sense of purpose, right?
It could be any line of work. Any I just use that as an example.
So what's interesting about, like, any line of work, but since we talked about stockbrokers, and I think that there's been so many examples of people that are pursuing that line of work, let's just say for money. You make good money as a stockbroker. You can make exceptional money. But then, you know, you hear of these stories, and I'm sure there's many others, you know, reverse stories, but someone that did that work and then felt unfulfilled and then felt that they weren't really fulfilling their purpose, so they quit and they become a teacher or something, and they feel happier about it. So we have to see what's at play here, because maybe someone really does feel like their purpose in life, maybe purpose can be defined as the best use of your talent, your talent, your skill set, your passion, the paradigm view you have of the world, the way you see the world is not the way anybody else sees the world. So maybe your purpose is the best use of that conglomerate skill set. And that it's less effort for you to do that kind of work than somebody else, and that you actually want to do it.
Does someone's purpose need to contribute to society?
I think no matter what we do, we contribute to society, whether it's negative or positive. So does it need to? I think there's no other way about it. But there's this like saying, I don't know where it comes from, but it says like, if you don't live your purpose, maybe this is something that's been said in the art world, that is akin to a doctor that sees, you know, an ER doctor that sees someone dying right in front of him and doesn't do anything. Right, like I'm probably botching these quotes, but like
it's like six different shows.
Yeah, but like basically, we are obligated to do our work, to express our creativity. Otherwise, we're depriving the world and the people in it and everything in it. What it is that we can uniquely give.
Yeah. So yeah, like. And the Spider-Man quote, with great power comes great responsibility. I don't know if I'd necessarily believe that, though, because just because you have the ability to do something or a talent, who cares? Like, it doesn't mean you have to do it.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, then we're getting into other things like, there's things when you actually can and are able to do something, you're going to face resistance. And, you know, it doesn't mean that just because you can and you're able to, it's just going to be effortless. That's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, but this idea that you need to share it with the world is something that I subscribe to, but I don't know if that's necessarily true.
Well, I think I don't know.
Maybe, what if you were a virtuoso, you know, you're a very talented cello player, and you could play at Carnegie Hall tomorrow. But if you didn't want to do it,
It's not a crime. But if you did want to do it, and you
but,
didn't.
But
do
my
it,
my point is, I used to think that it was because of, you know, this whole maybe the idea of purpose and the idea of of sharing your talent and squandering it. But I don't feel that way anymore. I feel like, again, we're defining that person of like, oh my God, he's a great cello player or whatever.
So, right. So it shouldn't come from somebody saying to you, you have to do this, right? It should be something that, you know, what is it that you're uniquely capable of doing? And again, uniquely capable, whatever. I mean, maybe five other people can do this too. It doesn't matter. But who cares about the other people? What is it that you yourself care about, think about all the time or most of the time, want to think about, want to talk about? If given the opportunity and you were at a, you know, had your own podcast, what is it that you would want to talk about or hear? That should already give you an indication of what it is that you predominantly care about. And it doesn't matter what that topic is. And then on that, you know, topic, how do you think about these things? Are you, you know, do you think about them analytically or, you know, creatively or whatever it is? What is it that, you know, we do in terms of society kind of break things down into chunks, into like little silos or something, like, oh, you're a teacher, that's it, that's all I need to know about you. But okay, so you're a teacher, but what are you teaching and why? Like, what is it that you like about teaching? Every teacher is going to have a different story about it. So I think purpose is one of these things that it can evolve and change over time, or at least the external manifestation of it can. I mean, at least I'm speaking from personal experience, where I thought I was going to be a vet, and then I became a photographer. And then when I wasn't a photographer anymore, what was I? And then I'm, you know, working at a nonprofit, and I do work in technology, and now I don't want to do that anymore. So what am I doing? These meandering paths or changings of career or whatever, I think actually when you look at them as a whole, allow you to see what are the common threads in all of these things that drew me to these different scenarios. And that actually has allowed me to see, or at least get a better glimpse of what my true purpose is, which I'm still figuring out. So maybe I won't make any big proclamations here on the podcast, but
that journey of kind of pinging from different things of like, okay, I've experienced this, and now I want to experience that. That seems like a very lonely pursuit.
Yeah, it is, especially when you were talking about society and how you have to, it deprives you of giving that definition of who you are. So like when you meet people anywhere, it doesn't matter, and they're not bad people, right? Like meeting people at a gym class or at a party, or for me at the dog park or whatever, and they say, what do you do? And you need to say, I mean, I've tried different things. You know, you can't say like, oh, I'm just on sabbatical. What if I'm just like rich and I have a trust fund and I don't have to do anything? Or what if I am doing this thing? Or what if, I mean, people just kind of want to place you, like you said, and have a conversation with you. So yeah, when you change careers like that or move away from something and you don't have a solid foot yet in something else, or you, even if you do, you're still like in between identities in some way, not for you, but for the world. And that becomes a difficult thing. Weirdly though, it's been very liberating, because I don't know. I know for myself, this is just me and probably other people, but for me, I wasn't able to just stay like in a job that I, you know, had when I was 20 something, and it was a well-paying job. I just couldn't do that forever, or for 10 years, or for 5 years. So
what is that seed that you think that like so many people are in your similar situation, but don't make the same decisions that you made?
Well, I'm in a, you know, I'm also in a different place. Like I don't have many dependents, right?
Not to get too bogged down in you specifically, yeah, right. But I just mean.
Oh, so I think fear is a
big one. There's so many people who, you know, you meet up with them and like, oh, how's it going? Oh, my job fucking sucks. I'm going to kill my boss. I'm like, whoa, dude. Yeah. Like,
look, it's either quitting or doing something else is an unknown path, and that's scary. And so what do you do? Sometimes it's like people prefer to stay with a devil they know than whatever, right. Whatever. I am really horrible with quotes. I should stop even trying.
You could just actually mix them up. Yeah.
It's better just stay in the shit that you know than
I accidentally said, blow the roof off the doors. Luckily, the person I was talking to got it. But
well, I
think
feel
that,
better about myself.
I think that pursuit is like, you know, it goes back to like, okay, you know, that primal thing of, okay, so the sun is going down, I'm going to go hunt. So animals, predators don't even think about that, that they know they need to do that. So if you have kind of like a roadmap of like, okay, I need to do this, or I need, you know, after I graduate law school, I need to be an associate at, you know, at a such and such law firm. So it's sort of like walking. So there's the difference between kind of, you know, okay, I need to get some supplies for my home. I'm going to hit up a Rite Aid or a Duane Reade, but I could take the long way, as opposed to I'm just going to take a long ass walk and I don't know where I'm going. Those are two different walks. And some people aren't comfortable with the second option of just kind of wandering, because it's like, where am I going? What am I doing? How long am I going to be out for?
It's, you know, we were emailing back and forth about this podcast, and as we were emailing, I was kind of starting to have these thoughts about the differences between individual purpose and collective purpose. And, you know, I don't know. I haven't fully formed this thought, so it'd be interesting to explore it here. But I think I know we each have our individual purpose, but because we live in a collective society, we also have a social purpose. And then that social purpose has forced us to create a society with rules, so that we can live together. Otherwise, we'd all just be like wild animals, and, you know, even wild animals have rules, but whatever. We have a bigger social fabric that binds us together. And then we've created government structures or governing bodies on top of this to, like, take care of things that we don't need to take care of or think about as individuals. So we have, wherever you are in the world, there's probably at some point some governing body that's dictating things, or, you know, by consensus or whatever. And then those governing bodies act like a top-down thing to kind of create norms and then control on the rest of the herd. And we as individuals are somewhere in there. We either are trying to aspire to, like, this top of the pyramid in some way, to, like, become president, or we, on the extreme, the flip side of that, the other extreme is that we just go off the grid and don't, we're not a part of the social fabric. And most of us are somewhere in between there. So we can't think about every part of this whole puzzle all the time. So we know there's trails that have been blazed to, like, you know, lead us to where it is we want to need to go at the end of the day or the beginning of the day, like to work and back. And then we can't expend too much mental energy thinking about going off that trail, right? So, like, if you went on a hunt and now this is the trail home, you can't start thinking about going off that trail because it's going to expend mental energy and that's exhausting. And you already made your kill and now you just want to get back to your tribe or your home or your hut or whatever. Let's just stay in 2018, like your actual apartment, and you carry a pizza home and that's it. Like, I'm always bewildered by people that, like, they just have a routine at the end of the day. Like, I'm done. I'm tired. I'm going to bring a pizza home. That's it. And, like, watch Netflix
There's comfort in that routine.
There's comfort.
It's like when you go to, like, going to a gym and having a workout routine.
Routines exist because it means you don't have to think about all the hundreds of variables of doing something new. Doing something new means, where am I going? Who's going to be there? How am I going to act? What am I going to do? What am I going to wear? What am I going to, you know, for food, what am I going to order?
Sure.
It's a thing. And then you're tired and you don't do it, right? Like, there's a reason why there's, like, chocolate bars at the end of, like, you know, at the checkout counter at a supermarket, because you've already expended all of your, like, mental energy and willpower doing all the shopping, doing all the hunting and gathering.
Right.
And now you're at the end.
So, so how do you correlate that with the...
With purpose?
But no, with the societal dynamics, with, you know, you brought up government and...
So I think, you know, there's like, it's almost like bottom-up and top-down forms of willpower, control, and purpose, right? And government has its own purpose and exerts a controlling force for good or bad on the rest of the people. And so that also allows us to, like, you know, there's roads that are paved, and this is how you get home. You don't have to go off this road or whatever. And there's things that are set up that you don't have to veer off this course. So I think that, and then, and whether or not it's, you know, this isn't a government thing, but we've also, as humans, set up social structures as like, and these are culturally different. So in New York, it's very money driven, our culture here. So what do you do? Oh, I'm a stockbroker. That kind of puts you at the top of the tier in New York, because that means you're making good money, or a hedge fund manager or whatever. You're making good money, and that means you can afford all the things, and you're like at the top of the pyramid here. Maybe in other places, it's that would be like not, no one would really want to talk to you because you're going to be this like money hungry New Yorker, and they'd rather you be a farmer or a hunter or whatever, or cowboy, I don't know, whatever. Where was I going with this? I probably should be taking notes as I'm talking.
But I think so in terms of the societal hierarchy, I think that's true. And I think one of the things that we talked about before we were recording or communicated with is how traditional norms still exist in people who, that you would think would not. I mean, and, you know, we both live in New York City, which is, you know, filled with very progressive, forward-thinking people, very libertarian, for the most part, I think, in terms of the way they view their lifestyles. However, I've witnessed so many people take very traditional views and actions on the way that they have courtship, marriage, forming a family. I'm not, again, this is just an observation, so it's not even a judgment. But I do wonder if it's something that they preconceive of, like, I'm going to do this because this is happiness, or we're on autopilot. You know, you're on a hike and you see the markers, and so you just follow the markers.
I think that like what we were talking about in terms of jobs, there are people that follow the markers because this is what they were brought up with and what they think they need to do. But I also know, and I'm sure you have these examples too, of people that weren't brought up that way, but end up taking what seems to be that route, but for very different reasons. Because
the traditional route?
What looks traditional, whether it's now, you know, courtship, I think, is making a comeback, right? Like, at least I've observed this, which I find to be very fascinating. Because it kind of went away for a long time. Nobody cared. It was like very old fashioned.
Let's unpack that. I think there's a reason why, right? So you had the increase of volume of women's voices of, let's be equal. And, you know, you don't have to open the door for me, where I'm an equal. I can do it myself. Mm-hmm. So I think men really didn't know how to react to mm-hmm. that. And so you started having these, you know, dates where like it was going Dutch mm-hmm. and it's like, oh, we're just kind of feeling things out.
Yeah.
And like, I think women were being more, empowered socially, that they could be as promiscuous as men, that they were kind of, you know, ping ponging around as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think you had a confusion from the men's part of like, oh, I don't know what to do. I don't know if I should pay or not pay. And so you had this thing of like, I guess we'll just be friends, or the complete, you know, other end of the spectrum of, you know, let's just go for a one night stand.
Well, this is funny because I think it brings up things that are really difficult and sometimes taboo to talk about, which is, our biological programming, right? I mean, it is 100% safe to say that women are biologically programmed to have kids and men are not. I can say that without getting any, like, no one can disagree with that.
Biology, how dare you?
Yeah, I mean, this is just how our bodies work. So from there, there's so many other things that we can start to extrapolate from that. So, like, you know, whatever. We don't even have to go into hunters or gatherers, because I'm sure women sometimes make better hunters than men. And that doesn't even matter. But just how our programming, and then let's relate that to purpose, it affects us. So women, we know, have different hormones and different body structures. Men are more capable of actually lifting heavier things for the most part, or just less effort for them because of the hormones or whatever. When we went into this mode of where everyone's equal and I can do all the things myself, which, sure, that's I'm all for it. Like, I think that led to a wave of liberation from women feeling like they could only pursue certain things, such as being a housewife or the caretaker or a low-paying job, to freeing their actual minds, which can think. It doesn't even matter if they have the same thoughts. They are of a different quality. It doesn't matter if it's better or worse quality, but a different way of thinking than men, just based on our hormones, right? Like, just based on our biology or the way we've been perceiving the world. So this kind of, like, we're equal, I think, was a necessary move to liberate a whole class of women. And I'm just talking in the U.S., like, forget other countries because I don't live there and I don't know what's happening there.
Yeah, fuck them.
Fuck them. Doesn't matter. Yeah, USA. So it allowed us to, or it is allowing us to get to, and even the Me Too movement is allowing us to.
The slurping, just a disclaimer, is Jackson. That's just because
Shuli's a male.
Just because Shuli's talking and I'm not, and you hear slurping, doesn't mean I'm like, well, fuck it.
Such a sloppy male.
Yeah, you know
what?
It's,
like,
you know,
chug. Yeah,
it's margarita day. I'm slurping it.
So I think that these movements have allowed for a liberation of ideas from a class of people that were, we just as a society didn't expect it, didn't want to hear from. That being said, I feel like women are also, or people are understanding that there's actual differences. And I think, you know, I don't actually really care what anybody else thinks in response to this. So I'll just say what I think. Because, you know, whatever. There's just so, you can get reamed on anything you say. But there is a biological difference between men and women. And I think that in my own even personal experience, I've gone from the, we're equal, you don't have to open the door for me, I can pay for myself, to being courted, and the power is actually in allowing yourself to be courted. That it's not by default, and it's not that somebody owns you, it's you've actually allowed a gentleman to do something so the best example I can give, and this actually relates to purpose, is when this really crystallized for me, is I was getting in the elevator and I was carrying a lot of things, like my hands were full. And I got in the elevator and this really nice guy was like, what floor? And I'm like, I got it. And I pressed the button and you could see how crestfallen he was. He's like, oh, like, I'm like, I deprived you of like a thing that you could have done that would have made you happy, would have made him happy. And I didn't realize that.
Fuck him. What does that have to do?
It doesn't have anything to do with the difference in understanding that, like, maybe that is somehow ingrained in a purpose of a man.
I for him, probably, yeah.
Maybe, yeah. Look, these aren't like big, you know, things of like every woman needs to allow
who
a man
is he? What
to
floor
like,
does he live
yeah.
on?
None of that matters other than that, who am I to deprive someone of like a happiness that would have derived from pressing a button? And it doesn't matter if it was a man or a woman, really, but...
Well, I guess you go down that rabbit hole of, you know, why if you're... Clearly you were in some sort of... Your physicality was compromised. So what compelled you to resist the help?
That this old way of thinking of I don't need any help.
And that's fine. And that's completely
fine. I'm not here to negate any of those lines of thinking. You know, that's a whole other podcast of allowing help or not allowing help. But what I'm saying is, as it pertains to interrelationships between people, but specifically, let's say between men and women, I've noticed that there is starting to be a comeback of allowing men to court women. And I can't say what age groups or where and who, but I'm noticing that it's coming back in a different form. And the form is that women are actually inviting it and allowing it rather than it being forced down. And it's interesting that it's happening during the Me Too movement, right? So it's like, I feel what the female population or women have been learning is that we have our own power, and that power doesn't mean that we are the men and we can like physically like force things to happen. We have our own power as being receivers energetically or whatever it is you want to call it. And we can have the power of allowing things to happen or not, or allowing a guy to court us or not, or just rejecting him. And that's his problem, however he feels about it. Anyway, we've like totally, I feel like
that's been there for a while, no?
But I think
you notice a different, you notice a shift lately.
Yeah.
Do you think there should be purpose, a defined purpose in dating?
No. How do you define that? I don't know. I mean,
well, I want this.
No, I think that can be, maybe that's good for some people. I think that that's dangerous.
Why?
Because that means you have to really know what it is that you want and who truly really
Some people
knows.
Do. Some
do
people
Do they truly really know what they want?
Yeah, I think some people do. Some people rearrange their lives to pursue an idea that involves another person.
That's a tough question for me.
So let's say, you know, from most religious people, right? They date to, actually, it doesn't have to be religious people, but specifically religious people, they date to marry and ultimately to make a family. So if that is important,
I don't think that that's purpose. I think that's intention.
Yeah, but your purpose, you have an end goal.
Your intention, yeah. Purpose, I think, I mean, not to split hairs, but I think purpose is something that digs way deeper than intention. Stating your intention is, I think that that's good, and we should all be doing that all the time.
My purpose is that I want a son and a daughter, and I want to live in a certain location.
That's your intention.
But that's like my dream.
A dream is different from purpose, too.
So what is, in this situation, what would be the purpose?
We don't, that is something we can't figure
so
out.
So purpose,
like that is purpose the individual is, needs to figure that out. We
so
can't.
Purpose is innate?
Purpose is, I think, a combination of innate, like programming, and I think it stems from something innate, always. And everything else is a result of that. Your intention, your dreams, your pursuits. But to say, now, I don't think those are mutually exclusive. Like, I think you could have an intention that is in line with your purpose. But I don't think that even as self-aware as you could possibly be, that you always know what your purpose is.
What was your journey from changing your purpose? What were some things that that you found difficult to let go? Or was it difficult to let go? And did you always move to something else? Or were you just discarding things?
Well, I want to ask you some questions, actually, if
sorry.
You're okay with
sorry.
That.
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
Because I can talk all day.
Yeah,
but
sorry.
What, I mean, so you...
Are you going to answer me or no?
But I've already, like, the question went in one ear at the other, because I've decided
okay,
to have to change the
okay,
table, so
fine,
sorry,
yeah.
People. Write down your question, ask me later. I'm done answering. So we're talking about purpose. I have a couple questions. One, I want to go back to your original quote that we were emailing about, which is animals in a zoo. Right.
Right. So yeah, the analogy that I had was, you know, when I was a kid and I went to the, you know, I loved going to the zoo and I loved seeing the animals and stuff. But I remember, I think what changed for me was seeing the cats. Primarily like the lions and the, you know, the predator cats, and they were just bored as shit, but they had an abundance of meat just thrown at them, more than they would ever get in the wild. They were just so bored. And I remember being like 7 and I was just thinking like, I really don't want to be here. I don't. And I remember I was at the Washington DC National Zoo, which is like, it's humongous. And I was thinking like, oh God, what are we doing? Like, what are us as humans? And I really just, it really started to see like these animals as prisoners. But I always go back to that because it's like, you know, when they're in the wild, again, we're, you know, the analogy we keep falling back on is they have very clear directives of to hunt because they need to survive. But when they're in that particular habitat, they don't know what to do. So they actually go crazy. And I think you could extrapolate that and put that similarity to anybody. So people who define themselves by their pursuit, whether, you know, we read about this all the time with athletes when they get injured or they retire, they get into drugs, mm-hmm. or they have extramarital affairs. Mm-hmm. Their life's like really goes down the drain, mm-hmm. because they're defined by, you know, what it is that they did physically, or mm-hmm. it doesn't have to be an athlete. It could be
any
sport or business or anything like that. But yeah, that was the analogy.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, so we as humans would think, okay, oh, well, if you had, like, everything you'd ever wanted, like, the penthouse apartment and all the money and all the things, like, wouldn't you just be happy? And maybe you'd be happy for, like, a week until you realize, like, this is actual, like, sheer boredom, that you're not actually doing anything. And this isn't true for everyone, but I imagine another analogy would be, like, prisons, where, you know, aside from, like, your personal safety, but everything else is taken care of. Like, you've got, you don't have to worry about paying bills, and all your meals are given, you know.
Some get
the
internet.
Like, movie night, and, like, you know, conjugal visits. And, like, you're square. You're actually, like, more secure than a lot of people that don't know where their next meal is coming from or how they're going to make rent, right? Like, you're good.
Let's all go to jail,
except for us, again, which isn't a small thing, like your actual personal safety. And but you're not free to go and pursue, like, I think that, you know, that when you're robbed of your freedom to go and do the thing that you want to do, that's imprisoned. That's you're in prison, in some kind of jail, right? Like, you can't say, I don't want to do this right now. I want to go do this. And that's where purpose, I think that's like the root of purpose. That's where it gets interesting because, you know, if you think about it in terms of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, on some level, our purpose on the most basic level is to survival, like you said, right? Like, to keep ourselves alive. Food, shelter, comfort, taking care of our families. But as we take care of those base levels, we start to ascend that pyramid, and we get to the top part of it, which is pursuit of, you know, creative, our true self, like our creative impulses or consciousness, whatever, finding out who we really are. And it's of note to say that when people in the first world have like problems, they're like, these are first world problems, because clearly they know that the problems that they're talking about aren't related to survival, shelter, food, right? And so there's like a guilt around it. But whatever, that means you're pursuing a higher kind of survival. You still have problems, and those problems relate to your purpose, mm-hmm. and your why you're even here. Because if it was just about survival, that's all we would ever care about, and there would be no further aspiration past that. Which means that there is a further aspiration past survival. There is something past just eating and procreating and building shelter.
The kind of the danger in purpose is there's a potential of introspection, because it's like the gym routine. Okay, I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this. So there's not a whole, so you get into a rhythm, and so you actually, which is actually good. So you don't have to think about things. So, you know, you're going to, you know, so mm-hmm. you can move more efficiently. Mm-hmm. If we model our lives like that in terms of purpose, then we don't, if we're moving like that, so there's no introspection. There's no, wait a minute, what the fuck am I doing? Am I doing the right thing? Am I wasting my time? Am I stupid? Am I crazy? If those questions start to pop up, then the purpose starts to maybe pivot, but typically not. And I think a lot of times when we pursue something, it is that kind of like we're like a horse with blinders on, and we're kind of like, well, I'm going to do this because I'm going to suffer through these days because I know at the end I'm going to get what I want.
Yeah. So you have had quite a life of being an actor and a performer. Where do you think that? Why are you laughing? Because I'm asking you questions, or because you don't want to talk about this?
No, I just you make me laugh. How's that?
Oh, okay. And you have good ideas. At what point do you remember that starting for you? Was that something that started at a young age?
The desire to mm-hmm. So the desire to perform and to be involved in the arts started very, very young, and throughout even high school and college, and I started expanding my world to writing and directing and not just performing. I think what started to the seed of doubt started to germinate within me was, working so hard towards certain things and then starting to get the reward of my work. And it didn't matter to me because I kept thinking like I busted my ass and I instead of falling short, because if you fall short of something, then you're like, okay, well, I just got to work harder. I got to work smarter. I got to recalibrate this plan. So I remember being at a short film festival, and my film got a couple awards, and everybody was at this festival was like, oh my, they were going bonkers over me. I'm saying, well, before anybody starts shutting off this show, I actually wanted to puke. I thought I was getting sick because I was like, what the fuck? Like, I can't, I was holding these things that are, made of glass and plastic. And I before, we left, myself and my producers, I was giving them away.
Wow.
I was just, and it really shifted just like that. And I was thinking, like, what am I doing? I mean, I didn't just, quit then, but the seed was planted pretty firmly there of, like, this is exhausting and there's no payoff. So that was one. And then it started to just kind of build from there. And so the second big wave was when I went to Japan for the first time, and I started, I saw a completely different culture and, I went to a place that I've always wanted to go to. And I was so anonymous. I mean, you can be anonymous and, any place in New York or wherever you live, but I was like truly anonymous. And it's like, you know what? I could tell them that I won this award or I did this, or, and they truly wouldn't give a fuck. Mm-hmm. I mean, most people wouldn't, but like, and I love that freedom. I love the idea that like all they wanted to know, like they just wanted to be kind to me. And I thought like in the human existence of the lowest common denominator, maybe this should be my pursuit of just being a good person. So then I came back to New York and I really just kind of, I was, started being surrounded by actors and so forth. And it just started to make me sick.
Yeah. So another question for you. And when you were starting off on the path of writing and acting, that was coming from a place of, that felt good to do it, right? Like,
yeah.
Do you feel like that is or was your purpose?
It was, yeah.
Do you feel like it's not your purpose anymore?
I don't love it, so no.
So no. The things you're exploring these days, like let's say the podcast or whatever,
yeah.
Do you feel like that feels good and, that's, do you feel like that's in line with your purpose?
I think, it's like a relationship. So you're in love with somebody and then the relationship ends. So you have to pick yourself up. I'm like, you have a broken heart and you have to say like, okay, where do I start now? How do I put myself back together? Where do I go from here? Because my heart is broken and I put so much time and energy into this relationship. So then you start exploring. When I had my breakup in LA and I came back to the East Coast, I took a road trip. And the first few days were pretty rough because I had that route of like, okay, I'm going to drive to get to this point because I was on some sort of schedule. But then it clicked in my head of like, I don't have a place to live. I don't have a job. I was just going home to my parents' house. So I'm like,
rush?
Yeah, who gives a shit? Yeah. So my pursuit every day was just to entertain myself. Like I would go to a gas station and somebody told me that they had a peanut festival. So I would go and check that out. So I just said like, I'd never lived like this. I never lived of like making myself happy as opposed to, you know, every day. I remember an acting teacher said every day you should do at least two things to improve your career. And so I was living this life where it was completely opposite. I was eating peanuts and, you know, sleeping in like a park and stuff. So to answer your question of when your purpose starts to disintegrate or completely erupts, that's when you start learning. That's when you start investigating and you start saying like, you know, okay, I like this. Okay, I don't like that. You start to discover. Because when you're on a path and you're like, I'm going to be an astronaut or I'm going to be a stockbroker, you don't have time or you don't have the curiosity to learn about,
right,
you know, learning Portuguese or deep sea diving, because you want to go from, you want to go, your movement isn't lateral. Your movement is vertical. You want to get better.
There's a couple, two things. One is, I think no matter the purpose, you should like, or it would behoove you in some way to incorporate a wider view of other things. Like it doesn't mean you need to have this, you know, like tunnel vision of like, I want to whatever, be a stockbroker. And so that's the only thing I will ever do.
But as a society, we encourage those people
bit,
of like,
yeah,
the singularity of like, oh my God, he's so driven.
Like, yeah. It looks like you're distracted and undisciplined. Whereas, you know, who knows, maybe we're starting to realize that like a multidisciplinary approach will actually even help you in pursuit of your purpose, even though it might take longer, right? Like it's, we now know that, children, babies that are taught multiple languages, more than one in the home when they're growing up, it takes them much longer to learn each of the languages, but it makes their brains much more flexible and adaptable to learning new languages and things that resemble languages in the future. So it actually is, you're kind of building multiple muscles at the same time, not just one. It takes longer, but you're more flexible. And I feel like that is the truth, you know, in every pursuit. The other thing I want to say is that I'm realizing as we're talking is that there is a distinction between purpose and identity, or there should be.
Typically not.
I would
agree.
Like to make this distinction now.
I agree,
yes.
That, but I'm saying typically,
yes,
people do not make that distinction.
Correct. And I've experienced that in my own life, and I think that this is something that we should make a distinction right here, right now, because this is a pitfall that happens, at least in the creative world, which you and I can both speak to, and that let's just talk about the creative pursuit, right? So like me, photography, you acting, or you know, these arts, right? And this was a drive that came from within. It felt like something that was undeniable in some sense, and also felt incredibly rewarding and liberating to pursue it. And then once that starts to solidify as an identity, it almost like becomes this shell that gets hardened on the outside and then is no longer flexible. So that becomes a mask that you wear. And unbeknownst to you even, right, that like suddenly became this thing. And for you specifically, you started winning awards, and that is great. But for you, that wasn't why you did it. And it seems like, I'm now just putting words here, correct me if I'm wrong, that this isn't why you even did it. And you didn't want to be known. Want to be known for that, or there was some disconnect between.
I got the impression. I got the impression that I somehow made it to a mountaintop, albeit a small mountaintop. That like this was the reward of my work, and I thought like, oh my God, this is not the emotional satisfaction that I wanted. So I think a lot of times, you know, the thing with, you know, pulling away from. You know, my hardened pursuit of you know, being an actor is the thing that so you asked me before, like, what is my purpose? Is what I can tell you is, you know, is that it has enabled me to be more curious about the world. And so my directive now is, how do I optimize my time here? How do I feed my curiosity? And a lot of that is, I don't know, because moving away from the pursuit of an acting career has enabled me to you know, dabble into martial arts, mm-hmm. learn about yoga, create this podcast, learn and meet people, mm-hmm. be it through this podcast or otherwise, people that I probably wouldn't ever meet, mm-hmm. you know. And it's funny, last week I actually went on some auditions from my agent. So I, because I said, oh, what the fuck, and I ran into some, it's just a weird, maybe this is very telling for this particular episode, is I ran into some actors that I hadn't seen. They were like, what the fuck, I haven't seen you in a while. And they were, but being in this, you know, because you're kind of like an incubation, right? And you kind of see, like, it's like a funhouse mirror of versions of you, mm-hmm. of like, okay, that's the fat version of me. That's like the really good looking version of me. That's like the shitty version of me. But like, I was like, and so I saw these guys like kind of like, you know, mouthing the words, kind of like memorize. It was like for a LG commercial. And I was just like, I'm just doing it for curiosity and you know, for a payday. But like, I wanted to like kind of like do the Spock Vulcan pinch to some of these folks and just like, look, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you took time out of your day to be here, so there's that. But like, let go of like the outcome. This doesn't, it's okay.
And part of letting go of that outcome is even letting go of the desire to do that for other people. Like, that's their journey, and it doesn't even matter that that's their journey. Like, you've had that realization, that's very liberating, and that's something that is, that's in my opinion, of course, a good place to arrive at. But it's also a scary place because it means you have to let go of so many things that seem important in the world.
So one thing that I have discovered about myself is, you know, once I made this shift, is I find that my worldview and just kind of like my outlook on life has changed so much through every year, almost every like 3 months or 6 months. And that didn't used to happen. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because I can't have the same conversation from year to year typically, because my outlook on the world changes so much.
I wonder how much of that is like a common phenomenon right now. I'd be curious if whoever's listening, all one, two of you, we love you, what people's experiences are like. Do they feel like their purpose is shifting rapidly more often or not at all? I don't know. I wonder how much of this is happening collectively.
Like, you think this is like a zeitgeist thing? Or
it might be. I mean, that's so hard to deny or quantify. Like, I think that there's, and sometimes we just kind of look to these, you know, we find the patterns where we want to see them. But I really do believe that there are zeitgeist moments that occur.
This may be a little off topic, but I think it relates. Do you think people feel more alone now or feel more of a community?
I have no idea.
Because I get feedback sometimes from the show of like, you know, I live in Kansas or whatever. Yeah. I listen to your show or whatever. But the antithesis of that is like, I've been that person where I've been incredibly lonely and I felt like nobody relates to me, and that actually happens to me like in my current life, because we have so many thoughts and so many ideas, and you know, technology just enhances access to more information. Does that make us more lonely?
I think the loneliness happens when we start to realize that these identities that we're supposed to be living, like, have become much more polarized, and we don't always fit those norms. So, you know, whatever culture you grew up in, and suddenly you don't, like, not suddenly, you just don't feel like you grew up in a Republican home and you don't feel like you're a Republican. It doesn't mean you're not, but you don't follow like the, what your parents think. And then by extension, like your whole family. And so you feel like more alone because you have what you think is an independent thought, but maybe other people have those thoughts, but they don't say them, and they just kind of go along with the tribalism of it all. I don't know. I mean, we are, you know, we've talked about this many times, that we are living in a much more polarized environment now. So it's much harder to express a difference of opinion within a community, because it's like a centrifuge, and like these things have become much more solidified on the ends. And there's less in the middle. So the people in the middle are a lot more alone. Yeah.
Any final thoughts on purpose?
Yeah, I mean, as we were talking, I realized that it's, I think it's really important to make a distinction for each of us between purpose and identity, because I think purpose is sort of like the core of who we are. It, and the way it expresses itself might change over time, but it is very closely linked to our dreams and our desires and our passions. And that can, as we pursue that, that might manifest as an identity. And identity is a much more fixed thing that we present in the world. Who are you? You know, what's your name? My name is Shuli. What do you do? I'm this. And that is like a fixed thing.
I think I'm a good person. Mutually exclusive to...
Think about it as like a still frame in a movie, right? Somebody says, who are you right now? It's a snapshot. This is it. And it's fixed and it's not changing. Because tomorrow, somebody might ask you that, it might be different, or a year from now, right? So, you can think of identity as a screenshot in a moving image of a purpose, right? So, like, purpose is always, it's not stopping. It doesn't stop, even when you die or after, maybe. Who knows? It doesn't matter. In this lifetime, your purpose doesn't stop, because when it stops, you're done. It's like the life force, right? So... what I'm getting away from this, and what I would like to, like, my final thought to share in this is that think about when you express your identity, who are you and what you do, as a screenshot, as a snapshot right now, and that's it. And you can discard it, but the purpose underneath is the thing that's always moving. And we shouldn't allow ourselves to believe the screenshot as the purpose. Like, this is just because you said this is who I am doesn't mean you have to be that the next second, even. It doesn't matter.
This would be so much easier if we're in cults. If we're in a cult, our purpose would be laid out and we would just... Yeah, what I would add to that is it's okay to be confused. It's okay to change your mind. And, our identity is not defined by... In fact, you know, I think one thing that I would encourage people to pull away from this is that don't tie your self-worth to the things that you pursue, because, you know, as I've illustrated, is you may get what you want, and then what? And then what if you don't get what you want? So it's
right.
it's a road to perdition doing that, because... And also, you're negating so much that life has to offer. So many things that you can, you know, like I said, I encourage you to go to a town or a place where nobody knows who you are, mm-hmm. and nobody actually gives a shit what you want to do. Mm-hmm. And then what? Then who are you?
Mm-hmm.
You have to actually have a conversation. You have to talk about peanuts.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is your life is so much more complex and diverse and interesting. Yep. Than the thing that you think it is.
Amen.
So let's have some margaritas.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next time. So